The intersection of digital privacy and parenting is something many people don't consider. I'm joined by Professor Leah Plunkett, who discusses this in her upcoming book, Sharenthood. This is the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about the law school and apply by visiting law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or hosts and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, Leah, what motivated you to write this book?
AJ, it was a combination of academic research interests and being a parent myself. So about 6 years ago, when I joined the UNH Law faculty, I also joined the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society down at Harvard. And I joined initially to do student privacy work with them and then expanded into a broader research agenda with their youth and media team that looked at digital privacy, but also other aspects of youth and digital life, including equity, digital citizenship, and autonomy. So kind of principles that we hope will construct digital life. And working with that interdisciplinary team on a range of outputs, including policy briefs and in-person convenings and other written outputs, really sparked my academic interest in the laws that underpin digital privacy and family life. And then add to that, over the past 6 years, I have also been parenting, initially one, now two children. My kids are 8.5 and 4. And so I'm very much squarely in that demographic of I log into Facebook and I can see toilet training and temper tantrums and everything in between. And I was trying to figure out myself as a parent who, I think as all parents experience those moments of pride, but also frustration, the need for commiseration, the need for advice. How do you make use of these wonderful forms of connectivity, not just limited to social media, but that's a prime example, while also thinking, gosh, my child may not be so happy 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road if I've just shared, every detail of the struggle we had last night over whether or not the child was ready to wear, big kid underpants to bed or should still be in a pull-up.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first generation that's really going to be encountering this. I'm 32. I got a five-year-old. It's basically from the current age 20, basically, kids. Wow. That I feel old all of a sudden. Never said that
before. You said
before.
It, I didn't, and I'm older than you are.
So basically, in 20 to 50 right now, this age range of adults, they're considered, that are having kids, they've kind of gotten on Facebook. It was just starting. I graduated from high school when it was the second year Facebook was around, I think. So I kind of was post the rollout of it. So it's really changed over the years. And privacy has been in the news a lot when it comes to like international relations, criminal law, things like that. We've discussed a lot of that with Buzz. But we've never really considered in the family how you should consider your privacy.
Right. And the laws in the U.S. are really set up to give parents almost complete autonomy over whether, when, how, and why to share. There are some outer limits. Mm-hmm. Certainly, parents can't do anything with their children's digital information that would violate criminal law or other independent bodies of law. Criminal law is the easiest example that comes to mind. You obviously, heaven forbid, can't manufacture pornography out of your children, right, let's say. You also couldn't take their social security numbers and apply for credit and abuse the credit somehow. That's another example of something that even as a parent, you should not be doing, although you do have control over your children's financial lives till they're 18. But outside of those kinds of outer limits, you get to choose as a parent whether, when, how, and why to share information. And that sharing is not just limited to social media, although that's in some ways the most ubiquitous example, but it's limited to, do you have an Alexa? Do you have a smart fridge? Do you have a fitness tracker on your child? What are all the types of digital devices and services in the home, either that you're giving to your child or that you just have around, that are picking up information about them? And part of why we don't have these same conversations historically, I'm glad we're having them more now, about children's privacy and privacy in the family, is we almost don't even see it, right?
Right. So integrated in 2019.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm certainly not advocating that we go back. I mean, I can't function without, the laptop up and the phone out and everything's kind of going at once, right? But I am saying that that when it comes to what we share it, right? So combined, and whether that's a social media post or, you know, having your child have a, you know, sensor enabled watch or t-shirt, we do want to be thinking more robustly than maybe we have about what kind of data do we think is being collected here. We don't always know, by the way. That's part of the tricky part.
And that's been a real issue with Facebook is people, there's been issues like with Cambridge Analytica.
Right.
People accidentally released their friends' information to a corporation that was used for political databasing.
And you would have had no way of knowing that as a user. And so part of what I talk about in the book is thinking about a thought compass. So I did not come out with a, you must absolutely do these 10 things, because if someone wants to tell me what those are, then write another book. But rather trying to come up with a way for all of us, both individually and collectively, to reorient ourselves. And the four pillars of the thought compass, the four points on it, I had as play, forget, connect, and respect. And really try to think, okay, childhood and adolescence as well, though it looks a little different there, ideally, I believe, really should be a play-based experience where kids can engage in mischief, even make mistakes, and learn from them and be better for them. And how do we protect that private space? Connect really means thinking about, again, sort of the authentic human-to-human connections that aren't mediated by technology. Forget is, can we either set up our use or try to advocate for products or legal changes so that there can be, Professor Jonathan Zittrain has called it a reputation bankruptcy, right? That what you get from a digital data trail after childhood and adolescence gets wiped clean. And then respect, recognizing that there are both ways that we, some with certain parents, sometimes overtly, with most of us just sort of inadvertently, we are monetizing our children's private lives, right? So the bargain that I'm striking with Facebook every time I use it is that I'm giving them private information in exchange for access to their service. When I'm giving them that information about my children, I am monetizing my children's information to receive a service for myself.
That's fascinating. Never thought of it that way, because I mean, that is the model they live off of, is advertising. And oh, I'm a, like for me, I'm 32 year old guy, got a 5 year old and a wife. Okay, now they can target me, they can target my wife, they can target the fact we have a kid. Now I'm going to receive advertisements for, oh, go do this event this weekend.
Did you get anything good?
I know, right? So has that really been considered by in the courts at all with regards to monetizing children in that way?
I have not seen a widespread set of lawsuits brought either by parents, and for kids to sue their parents in this country is not something we typically see. It can happen. You can see it in certain instances, like, for instance, if heaven forbid there's a car accident, the parent's driving in order to get insurance proceeds, sometimes you do actually see the child having to bring a formal suit against the parent using a guardian ad litem. You can see children typically through a GAL guardian ad litem or a next friend bringing a suit, potentially in an abuse and neglect situation or other situations. But because of the really supercharged, not just statutory, but constitutional level protections that parents enjoy in our country, as well as just sort of custom and expectation, the idea
that, a lot of independence when it comes to raising your kid, generally speaking.
And we don't want to do away with that.
Right.
Because if we were to step in and say, okay, we want, you know, so who gets to mediate those decisions, if not the parent, right? The government, that doesn't seem like a particularly good idea. So where I would come out is having more legal protections that are not regulating at the level of the family, but regulating at the level of the tech provider.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of what can be collected, what uses it can be put towards. So you gave a great example of, okay, you're 32, married, one kid. I know you have some cats, right? Share more private information. Right? So you're absolutely right. You can be, you know, marketing, advertising, data brokers are getting that information. What I'm even more interested in, and we don't know the answers to this yet. So where is the information that you are revealing about your son going?
Right.
And where will it go 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from
now? And exactly what data do they have about that? Like, are they storing that child's name? I mean, that get down to that personal information. I mean, it's pretty easy to track, like, oh, his birthday on this date, because, oh, look at all these birthday pictures that showed up.
Absolutely. And so to figure that out, right, for an individual company, there would be multiple layers that an average user would have to go through. You would have to, you know, if that company makes it easily available for you to see sort of what they have about you, you can start there. You can look at their terms of use. You can look at their privacy policies. Good luck parsing those.
Yes.
Because even if they have robust ones, which certainly Facebook in print would have something robust, there tends to be, and now I'm speaking in general terms, I don't know if Facebook's in front of me, there tends to be a lot of carefully lawyered language around the ability to share information to improve performance or to improve outcomes, or you share with partners for a better experience. And so
a better experience is advertisements
what
work better
that
for them.
What does that mean, right? Yeah. And at what point, you know, data brokers as part of the digital ecosystem are a huge player that we know even less about, than we know necessarily about a social media company. So the Center for Law and Information Policy at Fordham about a year ago released a really great study that looked specifically at what a set of data brokers had about youth and their capacity as students. And the information that the data brokers have isn't necessarily coming from schools, but is coming in from a range of sources. And some of the lists or selects, which I gather is a subset of the list they found, they're really invasive. I mean, they're looking at, you know, kids who are homeschooled, breaking down kids by religion, breaking down kids who might have some sort of health problem, rich kids of America, Jewish kids of America. And so you know, and then, okay, so those can be used for marketing and advertising, but then what will gatekeepers, employers, insurers, schools, et cetera, be doing with that information when your 5-year-old or my 4-year-old are applying to college, are applying to that first job? Maybe nothing. My guess is not nothing.
Yeah, and you're getting into grounds where you're going to be, a lot of companies are going to be at risk for being sued for discrimination based on some of that, which has already happened in some situations. Now, have other countries considered this in a different way from the United States?
Yes. So if you head on over to the EU under their GDPR, which went into effect last May of 2018, they have much, much, much more developed and meaningful protections around the right to be forgotten / right to erasure, that you can actually have information about you removed. I'm speaking in very broad brush terms here, you know, based on certain reasons. And so the EU in particular is light years ahead of us on the federal level in terms of the ability for kids to come of age and say, or adults as well, but we're focusing on kids here, and say, you know, consent was not meaningfully given for that information to be gathered, or that information is no longer relevant. We do have some individual states in the US that are moving toward some better, you know, rights, broadly speaking, rights to be forgotten, rights of erasure. We also in the US have seen hundreds of student privacy, specifically state level bills, some have passed, some have not, over the last few years. And those are starting to regulate more at the level of the tech companies themselves, the vendors. So moving away from this traditional model of parental notice and consent or substituted school notice and consent, and instead saying, okay, we recognize that these policies are really difficult to parse. It would be a full-time job to keep up with them. Parents certainly are not going to do that in their role as parents. So instead, we're going to say, you educational technology vendor, you are not allowed to collect certain types of information. Or if you collect it, you cannot use it to market or profile. And so we have some of that in the US, but we're far behind, certainly our EU friends specifically.
Do you have any predictions for what's going to happen when, like, the kids now come of age, like they start hitting their 20s, they get into college and they start realizing all this. Are you predicting a lot of lawsuits against larger corporations? Do you expect there to be problems like within families to be popping up?
I certainly see problems within families. Those are some uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah.
And I think that they may even happen sooner than college. You know, yeah. I mean, it doesn't take long for kids to be aware of the internet. They're learning about it in school. And so I think certainly uncomfortable family conversations. Yeah, the legal angle is interesting. And I think that, you know, I am always amazed and inspired at times by what good creative lawyering can come up with in terms of causes of action that we may not have seen yet. And the law is set up for that. So could you see an evolution in, let's say, lawsuits brought under traditional privacy torts, right? Maybe. I still tend to be of the mind that it is going to stay difficult in this country for children to bring suits against parents for decisions that parents made about the child when the child was a minor or about the family unit. I just have a hard time imagining that you would find a solid cause of action for, hey, mom and dad, I'm now 19 and I'm suing you because it turned out that the Alexa you had in the house was secretly recording me, that somehow got aggregated into a profile about me, and I feel like I didn't get into Stanford because of it. No limits on creative lawyering, but potentially more against companies.
Mm-hmm.
And also in terms of pushes both within the marketplace and within law reform to say, all right, companies, we don't know exactly what you have about us, but hey, lawmakers in DC or in the state capitol, we want a law that is actually policed by, be it the Federal Trade Commission or state level.
It's got to be enforcement somewhere.
Exactly. saying that, you know, it would be an unfair or deceptive act or practice to take any of the information that was collected about us when we were minors and use it for predictive analytics around our success in college, right? And of course, you would carve out the SAT or the or other sort of traditionally valid metrics. And I should say, too, you do want to leave open the possibility that in this process of, you know, the big data world we live in, that we may well come up with metrics and predictive algorithms that are actually better at predicting success based on previously uncollected or even unknowable data than something like the SAT. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to deprive ourselves of the opportunities that can come from better data-driven decision-making, but we do want to be aware that we are really sort of making, as you articulated very nicely, this huge sort of generation, maybe even two generations at this point, of kids who are kind of becoming unwitting research subjects in our great data-driven experiment.
When and where can people get Sharon Hood?
Thank you for asking. Sharon Hood is part of the MIT Press Strong Ideas series. It will be released for sale on September 10th, 2019, but it can be pre-ordered now on Amazon and through a bunch of other sellers. And anyone who wants to download a free chapter or get links to all the different places, including some independent bookstores that are taking pre-orders for Sharon Hood, can go to Leah Plunkett, LeahPlunkett.com, and download a free chapter of the book and also do a pre-order.
Thanks for listening to the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about us by visiting law.unh.edu or following UNH Law on social media. Be sure to comment and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire.